So after Jigger Johnson, which was crazy, you took a few weeks off.
And went to New Jersey.
Went to New Jersey.
For a belt buckle.
For a belt buckle.
The coolest belt buckle of ever.
We're not at the swag portion of the interview.
Don't look.
Okay. We know we're excited about the belt buckle. You will get rewarded.
And they're all individual, and you get to pick your own.
So we're talking about Wild Goose here. So Wild Goose was on your schedule for mostly like social yay reasons. Mm-hmm. Like, you're excited about the RD. You're excited about this inaugural race. Looks like it's going to be a good one for people's first 100, which obviously
you're generous.
You're excited about women doing their first 100. This looks like it's going to be a good one for women to run their first.
It sounded like the one, like, if we had one race to truly get behind it for when people come into the group and say, what should my first 100 be? It sounded like it could be the race to be like, this race. Yeah. And obviously, I wouldn't want to get behind a race like that without seeing the course, one. Yeah. So that was in my head already.
So going to run this was like, this was like a project task. This was for the...
A little bit. Well, this was in my head. But then Kim Nardi, she was like, you guys should come run it. And I was like, no, our plate is too full this year. And then, do you know what Kim does? She posts a picture in our group of the belt buckle.
That's how come we signed up.
Yeah.
Not and then we're like,
we're building
like
up.
A Sasquatch riding a goose over a race.
We're going to talk about the race itself, and then we can talk about the belt buckle.
So then, I think we were on the plane. Weren't we on the plane to one of the other races? Like to Panama or something? I don't even remember.
To Reggio d'Olivia?
I think we were on the plane to a race.
And you're like,
back in March.
When we saw the belt buckle, and we're like, oh, shit. So then we signed up. Yeah. So, but then it worked. You know, that was part of the appeal, too, was getting to actually see the course. And it's like, well, this will be a good thing because then we'll
you can confidently say, I've seen the course. This is going to be a good first 100 miler for people to train for, because it's it comes back to the same. So like drop bag planning.
Yeah. You only need one drop bag.
Yeah. Because it's like a clover leaf or daisy type thing. Yeah. So it's not repetitive the same way, like doing the same loop over and over again, but you get to come back to the same drop bags.
Right. And it's kind of like with like a vernal equinox, for example, for people who have run that, where Nettie and Jennifer have that horse farm rented out, and people could have the horse stalls. It's kind of a similar concept where people could set up their own tent. So they don't have anywhere over at the aid station for your drop bag. You set up like your own tent, or you could go out of your car or whatever. So you could go big with it. Like you could have this whole tent full of like just all your goodies and a cot if you wanted to, you know, whatever. Like you can make it your space.
One of those fancy reclining chairs. There,
you could have as much stuff as you want in there. There, you know, the sky is really the limit.
And you could invite your lazier friends to crew, because they don't have to drive all over here to Kingdom Come.
Right, they can nap while you're doing loops.
You should still pack your drop bag, but you don't have to worry as much about your crew getting a flat tire, because they're staying in the same spot the whole time.
They're staying in the same spot. And then to kind of put the cutoff in perspective, it has the same cutoff as Crazy Mountain.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but the Wild Goose course is not
it's
as
not
crazy
as the sea level.
It's the Crazy Mountain course.
It's wild, but it's not crazy.
Close to sea level and half the gain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and yet with the same cutoff.
So it looks like statistically very approachable, and as approachable as 100 miles.
Really?
Because let's just take a step back and look at context. You're still going 100 freaking miles.
It was supposed to be our fun, and I use this term to not minimize what it would be for anybody else, but for where we've been, our easy 100 for the year.
Yeah.
I hesitate to use the term easy with 100, especially knowing that for somebody doing it as a first 100, it's not going to be easy. I'm just saying...
Sometimes you look at statistics and something ends up not being that easy, too, like Oregon Cascades.
Yeah.
It's the sand.
Yeah. So relative to what we've done, it was supposed to be our easy fun 100 to kind of finish off the year.
So there was somebody who showed up to run, I think, unexpectedly, named Ida.
Ida. Do I know Ida? Where'd my water go?
Oh, was it Ophelia?
No. Ophelia. Okay. Her name was Ophelia.
Because we had to listen to the Lumineers song, Ophelia.
Okay. Ophelia. So Ophelia showed up to run.
Mm-hmm. And then it was really cold and wet.
Ophelia, I think this was time. Ophelia's first 100-miler. Mm-hmm. I don't think Ophelia has shown up to any other 100-mile races. So, Ophelia was a hurricane at that point?
No.
I think it was only ever tropical storm. It was just rain. And
no, that's not accurate. They don't name rain.
Yeah, but we weren't in the hurricane.
It was like the remnants of
okay, the aftermath.
Yeah, so it's not like it didn't go directly over, but it was like, yeah.
It just rained. And then it rained.
It was the remnants causing just rain.
Then it was foggy, so you couldn't see anything, and then it rained some more.
Yeah. Lots of rain.
And then
then for a while there was wind. There was like a lot of wind.
But there were bears.
There were bears. So bears are cool to see, but Ophelia maybe added some things to what should be a more approachable 100-miler.
Because it still should have run fast. Like, we both ran faster than Crazy Mountain, but not as much faster as I feel like it should have run. But I guess maybe I'm discounting how much the mud and
There are rocks. I don't want to... There are definitely parts that people would call technical. Would I call the race technical? No, I wouldn't generalize the race as technical, but there were technical parts.
How would you compare it to, say, the course at Outlaw, which is another one of those daisy, cloverleaf type things?
I would say Outlaw is much more technical.
Okay.
And has more elevation gain.
Okay. So, in a year where they both have good weather, you're going to say... Wild Goose is more approachable for our first 100.
Well, I mean, it's hard to say because Outlaw has an even more generous cutoff because of the 135. Yeah. They just keep 40 hours open as long.
Yeah, so Outlaw, as long as you'll keep hiking.
Yeah.
Because all you got to do is put one foot in front of the other to make that cut off.
And you've got constant drop bags there, too.
That's like a you could crawl. And, as long as you keep going, you'll finish pretty much. It would be really hard to kind of imagine a situation where
you're... So if you're somebody who's, maybe a back of the packer at your 50Ks, your 50-milers, and you're looking to do your first 100, but because you can still do technical stuff... Maybe Outlaws.
It's not dangerous technical. Cause there's that one downhill that you can slide down.
Yeah. No. There's rocks and stuff.
But if you're somebody who's you're a trail runner and you usually run, you're maybe
you can run Outlaw.
You can run Outlaw.
You can also
do Wild Goose as your first.
Right.
Because you're probably not going to be chasing cutoffs because the cutoff is still doable. What's the cutoff at Wild Goose?
36 hours.
36 hours. Okay.
Yeah.
And because they also have a 36-hour event going at the same time. And so you can sign up if you want to avoid a DNF. You can sign up for the 36-hour and just try and get your 100 miles in your 36-hour.
And that's part of what's so cool. And then if you do get 100 miles, you still get your buckle and stuff.
Yeah.
So Tina did the 36 hours and she got her second 100-miler finish. Woo-hoo! She got her buckle.
And
with a buffer.
She won amazing. The 36.
She did. She actually did really amazingly well.
So, whoop, whoop. What up, my birth, Tina?
Did,
yeah.
She did very, very well.
And I was really, really shocked.
She got a lot stronger.
In New Jersey, I spent a lot of time in Newark, more than I care for. There's a lot of miserable days in Newark, but that is the only part of Jersey I've ever been to. And I assumed, New Jersey's so small that... It's just Newark,
It's just the airport. It's all New Jersey.
I was very, very surprised that this was a really beautiful, just very kind of peaceful area.
Nice.
Like, there was just something about it that just kind of called to me where I'm like, I kind of want to come back here. There were lots of bears.
So many black bears.
I ended up only seeing one, but everybody there were enough that
everyone
was seeing them. I only saw one. And then I always tell Hieronymus, our little skunk, I tell him he looks like a baby black bear. When he's upside down doing this, he looks like a little baby black bear. So when I saw the black bear, I'm like, Hieronymus!
It was our first race where we had a pet sitter.
It turns out a lot of people are afraid of black bears. I was a little bit surprised by that. But they're for people who live by black bears, it's like seeing a squirrel. They're pretty skittish. They run off usually.
Yeah. I'm afraid to have my dog around black bears.
That's
I don't want him to have a scuffle.
That's fair.
I've seen him scuffle with raccoons, and that was a little scary.
It's no good when he scuffles.
And they're basically just raccoons, but bigger. How'd you do at Wild Goose? Did you finish?
Yeah, we finished.
Did you finish? Did you win?
Yeah. Yeah, once again, Field dropped out, and we were 1-2 for a second race in a row, which is pretty funny.
But it was definitely a finish.
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
Tina finished.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
She
were,
finished, but she finished with the 36 hours. So
right,
she
technically
well.
A different division.
So, Women's Hunter Project sent some folks to Wild Goose, brought back a victory in the 36 hours, and a victory in the 100 mile.
And
the second place in the 100 miles. So, which to take home the big prize.
But Carmel injured herself and her foot swelled up to twice the size of the other one.
Yes, let's talk about that foot. I know you.
I'm losing my toenails, but damn.
So Carmel made a good post about it in the group, but this is going to be on YouTube so people not in the group can see it too. Carmel's foot swelled in such a way that anyone who looked at it thought, you should go to the hospital. it's a big foot. Like, imagine if you're looking at your friend's foot and your reaction is, you should go to the hospital. This is what the foot looked like.
It's because she ran 35 miles.
It was. The color looked fine.
Hurting.
The color of the foot was fine. It was just skin colored.
It's just swollen. She swells up when she runs.
It was very swollen.
Everything on her
swollen. It was. Yeah.
Not like that, though.
Yeah, that was remarkable.
Nah.
I think you're downplaying how you were.
It wasn't puffy.
You were the one who was like, I don't know, it might be broken. Like, it was.
It looked broken.
Yeah.
It was like.
Now she's like, she just swells. Like,
no,
it was very clearly
like. I don't think it's broken.
I think it's
soft tissue. We had this conversation. I was like, it could be broken. I think it's soft tissue.
You changed your response a couple times, but you told Tina that I probably broke my ankle.
The toes look so tiny. Because the whole foot was like
pretty
swollen.
Dramatic.
It's
pretty great.
So, but and like the next day, she's like, "Who's got crutches in my size? I've got some traveling to do. Like, I just need some crutches."
Do you know where those crutches wound up? In my car, because she didn't take them with her travel.
Well, there was like the sudden improvement. I didn't know what was going to happen. I wasn't sure what was wrong.
Yeah,
so I'm like, if I'm going to be having to go to Florida and keep up with my kids, like I couldn't walk at the point that like we acquired the crutches. Like, yeah, I was having difficulty like walking at all. Like I was having to lean on things and it was not pretty. But then once the swelling went down, like, some of the pain was just from how swollen it was, even, because the swelling went everywhere, so it was hard to pinpoint where the problem even was, because the pain was everywhere and the swelling was everywhere. So it was like,
The swelling itself was probably causing pain just because pressure.
Right, exactly.
Because there was a lot of swelling.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, like, even my toe hurt, and I knew it wasn't my toe that was in, you know, it was just everything. It was hard to pinpoint, hard to guess what was going to happen, so it was worth it to get the crutches, even if I didn't end up taking them to Florida with me, you know? Like, but at the point that I was ready to leave to Florida, it had improved so quickly. Like, it still hurt, but it was like, it improved so quickly that it was like, well, now crutches are a lot to manage for, like...
Do you think something subconsciously in the back of your brain was like, I've seen something like this before with my body? My body knows that this is okay.
It wasn't,
or will be.
It wasn't until the swelling went down. Because for the first time I had it, I had a similar injury before. The first time I had it, it was on the other leg, not this leg, but also the swelling was only here.
Right.
And this time I pushed harder and longer on it, but the swelling was everything. Yeah. So I don't think.
I remember seeing it the first time, but it was after Oregon Cascades, and I was with you guys for that.
Yeah.
I did see that puffiness, and I saw in the pictures of this puffiness, and this was the next level.
This was much more. So I think at the point.
Well, there was
I think,
some. You injured something else because you had a little bit of bruising here, too.
Well, I think I
which
thought.
Which was concerning the next day.
Well, and then, like I told you, I twisted my foot. Like, I had gone downhill, I slipped on a rock, I twisted my foot pretty badly, like, from visually looking at it. But this happens to me all the time because I do the strength exercises.
Yeah.
I think, like, oh, God, what did I just do? And then I'm like, oh, it doesn't hurt. I'm okay. And it was kind of one of those. But then as I started running and I started having pain later, I looked back at that and I thought, maybe
it
did. Was that it? But I do think while I was pushing on it.
That wasn't it.
I do think while I was pushing on it during the race that I thought it was what I did, the tendon issue that I had before.
Yeah.
Until I got to the finish line and sat down and took my shoe off, and then like all it was so crazy. All the pain just hit after I got to the finish line. It was like my body knew. My body knew we just have to get to the finish line.
I've been saving up.
I was like, stop it. I know you need to shut up till I get to the finish line. I was swearing at it and everything else. So like, there's conversations. There's a reason my body, but my body, like, there is mind-body stuff, because it was, like, literally right after I crossed the finish line that all the pain hit, like, tremendously. I sat down, we went into this little thing.
Change clothes.
Yeah, we went into this little office so I could change my clothes. And when I took my shoe off, it was just, like, all the pain hit.
You couldn't put the shoe back
on. And then I looked at it. Yeah, I couldn't get the shoe. No. It was just, like, my whole foot.
I would have been shocked if you could have gotten the shoe back on.
So at that point, I no longer thought it was the tendon thing, because that was nothing like it looked. You know, it was my whole foot, my whole ankle. I was like, oh, shit. Like, what did I do? Like, you know, that maybe when I – because that – foot bend that I was talking about was so crazy. I'm like, I ripped something or I broke something. Like, it was, at that point, I definitely
figured out that it was the tendon thing.
It was the tendon. So once the swelling went down, which took days, I mean, like, when we got back to the Airbnb, I was, like, using an office chair as, like, this, like, walker, like, sliding it around the house. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, almost, like, bless her heart. She, like, went out to get me a leave and beer. And, like, it was just, like,
was nice.
Killing the pain. Like, not that I recommend that combination. Yes, thank you, Alma. You're fantastic. Almost so nice.
She really is.
She's great.
Yeah.
but, it was bad for a few days, even when we got home. And, like, it wasn't until a couple days later when that swelling went down that I could finally, it turned into the same thing where it's just a bubble right over that tendon spot, like, just that little bubble, and the pain is concentrated again to just that bubble.
And you were able to jog on it today.
So now I'm like, oh, yeah, this is the tendon issue I had before. It's just last time it was on the other side. And basically what it's from is because I do swell up during races, what happened a couple years ago is my sock, like, dug in because of how swollen I was. It started digging in, and it dug into, like, the tendon. Like, it basically causes that. Hopefully I'm explaining it properly. It causes damage to, like, the tendon sheath, and fluid gets stuck in there, like, where it shouldn't be. And then now it's inflamed. Now it's rubbing on everything else around it as you're running. So now it's getting more inflamed and more angry. And it's one of those, like, cycle things, like, kind of like an IT band injury where it's like, it just keeps growing, and now it's rubbing itself. And now it gets bigger. Exactly. So I had this before, but at least I've dealt with it before. I know how to manage it. It's already improving. But that was... things got interesting.
You're actually jogging on it faster than last
time. Well, it's weird. I went jogging yesterday and today, and it really, that part didn't hurt much. Now, when I did 6-minute legs, the bending, like, really, really hurt it. But, like, I could do, like, a little shuffle, and it's not nice. It's not hurting.
So those who have seen the picture of Carmel's swollen foot, happy to know that the foot is now.
Sometimes you just got to wait and see. If it hadn't gone down and it kept hurting, it would have gone for an x-ray. But
what? And I shared in my post, too. I shared it with everybody. Like, the last time that this happened, it literally cost me... I have insurance, and it literally still cost me over $1,000 out of pocket to go get x-rays, go get an MRI.
Yeah.
Have a sports doctor who is completely useless say nothing more than we would say to anybody with that problem, which was, oh, just rest it. Or actually, he was worse. He'd go, oh, just don't run. Or she, don't run for 8 weeks. It's like... I can not run for 8 weeks, and then you could come back for a follow-up in 8 weeks so that you could do what? Like,
talk to your fellow crazy runner friend. The movie, he's like the craziest running doctor I could go to, and that's the only one that we would send people to is Dr. Matt. Dr. Matt. Because they're like, well, we understand that you're crazy. Here's how we treat you during your crazy.
He's like, these hands will fix it.
Okay. Yeah, so... several of us have been treated by Dr. Leo, so ask your crazy.
He diagnosed me with, so after $1,000, I still had no answers in traditional healthcare. And when I went to this sports chiropractor, Dr. Matt, he had me diagnosed within like 20 minutes. Started working on me right away. He had this like little spatula thing he was like shoving the fluid out with. He's like, what's your next race? And I'm like, 4 weeks, and then another one 2 weeks after that. And he's like, all right, you're gonna run that race. He's like, but you're gonna have to see me a lot. it was great. So now I at least this is a familiar. So what I was gonna say, as far as the sock thing goes, is I didn't realize it until this all started to click again, like, until I started to realize it's the same problem again. I just got like new socks after Jigger Johnson.
And then, only then, did I remember that Lee and I had, like, stretched out my old socks. We, like, put them on something big and round. I don't even remember what.
Yeah.
But we, like, left them on something big and round overnight. And
yeah.
I'd forgotten we even did that. Like, it wasn't even really a thought. In my mind, when I got these, like, new socks, like, because I didn't remember until now. And I was like, oh, crap, they're not stretched. So when I got all swollen, they started digging completely in again and all the stuff. So, yeah.
So we've talked about the ankle. We gave a shout-out to Tina for winning 36 hours. Shout-out to Alma for treating you well with your foot recovery.
Oh, yeah.
I know Tina mentioned Karen earlier that she Karen was a big factor in Tina finishing the 100 miles in 36 hours.
One high energy.
Karen literally gave me the shirt off her back.
Oh, yeah. We all went through every layer we had.
Oh, yeah.
I made a point of I'm just not stopping because I have to run until I'm done because I have no dry clothes and I'm way too cold.
I would have never expected to get so wet under my rain jacket.
Well, there was the other thing that made it so difficult because you'd get warm, so you'd open your jacket up to cool off, but then you'd get soaked, but you wouldn't realize it because it always misting.
Like misting.
So you'd get soaked, so then it would start to pour and get windy and get cold, so you'd zip your jacket up because the temperature kept going up and down by like a 15-degree range. So you'd zip it up, but then you were totally soaked underneath to the point where there's water dripping down your arm. And so it's only so warm, and then you'd try to put on dry clothes, but you only had so many dry layers because I'm not used to getting that cold. It's not usually an issue, but everything just kept getting so
We could have packed better, too.
And then also we didn't sleep well the night before because the house, four houses down, the propane tank blew up and blew the whole house up.
The house blew up.
They had to, like, 10:30 at night, and they had to bring in rescue.
Oh, it wasn't even 10:30.
Like, everybody survived. Shockingly, actually, this is a huge news story in New Jersey.
But it sounds like a bomb going off. And
this was just a few doors down from.
Yeah, we had just gone to bed. We'd all gone to bed. It was like around 9:00, and then 15 minutes later, I was just about to shut the light off too. We were like falling asleep. It was like boom, and the whole house just shook, and we were just like, "What in the world?" So yeah, it turned out that the house a few doors down just exploded.
They have those giant house-sized propane tanks that heat your whole house for winter.
This was like closed down the street, emergency crews.
Yeah, so when we first went outside,
house was caved in. They had six people, and three of them were trapped inside.
When we first, like, me and I ran outside, and I'm like, "Are there people out?" And she's like, "No," and I'm like, "That's weird." And I'm like, "Oh, I think there are people over there. Go ask them." I was like, I'm going to check the basement and the deck. Like, I'm like, could the deck have just, like, fallen apart? Yeah. But that wouldn't explain the boom, but when you're in the middle of all that, like...
Yeah, you're just trying to figure out.
You know, because I'm like, maybe it was...
Look for lights in the sky the other direction.
Because I'm like, if everybody else hasn't just run outside, then maybe it was in our house.
Yeah.
But I think everybody was just getting dressed and stuff, because shortly after, everybody was outside, like, even from way down the street. And then people who even stayed at the race campground said they felt it. Like, that it was, like, felt that far. And that was... That was a 10-minute drive away.
But so they were only a couple miles away.
You can imagine if they felt it, what we felt.
That's right, because we were back behind the race course, so we actually were staying about 2 miles from
So, it was one of those things that just, you know, just rattled, like, all of us were just kind of like, well it's going to be hard to sleep now. Over. Yeah, like, I mean, we took a few minutes just kind of, like, trying to calm hearts down, and then it's like you try to go to sleep, and you hear the emergency vehicles and the... I mean, by the time we went back in, to be clear, it was like, they were like, there's too many people. There's too many people here. Like, there's live wires down. Like, the emergency people are pulling in. Like, you're just in the way at that point. So we did wait till that to go back inside. But throughout the night, there's like, you know, sirens and then the medevac and then the news, like, you know, the helicopters. So there wasn't much sleep, but... I guess there's often not much sleep the night before a race but that was definitely kind of a big thing to
end up out of bed
You're trying to sleep. And then
I was sleepier than normal for a single night. I kept just falling asleep on my feet, and I'd put in a lot of caffeine, and my stomach was mad for no good reason about the caffeine. But then it just happens. That's like some races, you don't know how hard they were, because sometimes the race goes perfectly to plan, and other times... multiple things just go wrong that are completely beyond your control.
Yeah.
And so it feels harder by hours. There's the weather, and then there's all the other multiple things.
Yeah.
You know, like you hit one rock wrong with your toenail, and then it hurts every time it touches the inside of your shoe. So you get timid on your descents because there's mud. So every time
you start moving
every
your foot
time,
differently.
If you slide just a little wrong in that mud, you're gonna clip the next rock.
Yeah.
If your toes aren't hurt, whatever. You clip them and jump over them. If your toes hurt and you can't see because of the mist, it starts to get where it slows you way down. Like, oh.
So, and then at one point there was a young man in his 20s. This headlight's like just shining at me kind of the wrong way. And he's like, hey, are you on this loop? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, it's my first 100-miler and I'm really concerned about going out here at night in the woods by myself. Can I run with you? And you know what I said? I said, yes, because he said,
because
it's so my first 100-miler and I'm scared. Can I run with you?
Yeah.
Not like, oh, I know everything about
100. I'm here to give you advice. Like, yeah. You shouldn't be alone out here, little miss.
Yeah, exactly. So I ran with him for 7 miles.
Nice.
He came with me.
What was his name?
I'm just showing the contrast.
Shit, I don't know. Oh. Yeah, but you let him run with you.
But he's nice.
Yeah, he was nice. He's a nice guy. I don't know if he ended up finishing or not, but hopefully he did.
Hopefully he did. If he didn't, he's in his 20s. He's got plenty of time.
I mean,
time
it was a tough one.
And he could come back to Wild Goose on a year where there's not a hurricane.
Exactly.
Where it's not 50 and rain.
And that's the thing. I mean, this was so humbling for me, having gone into it thinking, like, just, you know,
this is going to be my easy one.
Yeah, because it ended up being so hard. Like, I remember just seeing Tina at a point in the night where it's been so cold and so wet for so long. And, you know, you're doing the loops, which I don't think would have been bad at all if it wasn't for, like, just they were declining, you know, the conditions. So you knew what you were going into.
Yes.
It was like, it's going to be the last time
I did this loop. But worse.
In good weather when no one's dropping. That aid station is much more crowded, and there's music going, and it's isolated from anything else.
Right.
So you'd usually have like music going through the night and like people outside
all
night long because the whole thing is ongoing.
Yeah.
But when it's raining constantly and cold and wet, no one can stay warm. And you would see, like, you would think, maybe I'm just a pansy. And then you'd come in and see what people's crew were wearing. Like the layers of coats and like people wearing like rain pants and like winter over pants and like not even just regular pants and like these heavier coats and stuff with rain stuff over them.
They're dressed
a lot heavier.
Yeah, right.
It's
I remember
cold.
It kind of ended up with Tina for on a road section for a little bit. We were headed towards different loops, but at some points they're kind of conjoined. And, you know, we were just kind of checking in with each other. And just it was telling her, I'm like, this is really, really hard.
Because the way they started is the 100-miler started on one loop and the 36-hour started on a different one.
But all the loops overlapped at different points as you were coming in and out of aid.
So
one went out by itself, the other two went out together, but then two of them would come in together.
So you could definitely sync up with people.
So definitely recommending this one for people.
You don't get confused, though, because they're colored loops.
Yeah.
And each time that you check through, you check in. And then when you check out, they tell you what color you need to do next. Because they make a little X for what you just did when you come check in. And then when you check out, so they know what,
well,
and they tell you what color to follow. You go follow that color till you come back. Then you check in. And then when you check out, they'll tell you again what color to follow.
You want to know something? That's
more of a shout out.
So you
to
won't be
race to rest.
Well, I'm going to tell you something funny. This is the most well-marked course I have run all year.
To run immediately after Dickerson.
And I did 5 bonus miles. I did more bonus miles than I have ever done at any race ever just because of my own stupidity and out of itness and whatever. Like, I did more
you
bonus miles.
You got over-reliant on those good markings?
Well, yeah, I think it's like at Jigger Johnson where it's completely unmarked. You're just like, oh, am I going the right way? Am I going the right way? But, like, with the markings, you're just like, you get complacent. And I just got in my head. And
5
like,
miles later, you're like, oh, shit, I haven't seen
2.5 I should turn around and come back.
There were 2 times I did it. And it's funny, you could see the difference in our Stravas. I'll have to show you later because it's kind of funny that you could see, like, you see the loop, but you see the part where I just, like, just kept going and didn't make the U-turn. And it's like, it's in 2 spots that it's the exact same thing. So if you compare your Strava to my Strava, it's funny because you could totally see exactly where my bonus miles
I know where one
happened.
Of them was for 100% because every time I got to that point, there was a sign for the other color loop. And you could see just the color of the back of it. Because even all
that's
the signs match the color.
But that's
spent.
Just you cheating,
so,
cheating Kim out of money because you only paid
sign,
for like a little over 100 miles.
I almost did the exact same thing, only I had the colors fixed in my head. I saw the color of the one sign and was like, what color am I on? But I had to catch myself in that same spot. And there were a couple times I saw other people and you'd see them pause and like, wait, what? It's downhill that way.
Because
the 2 loops came into each other and then joined together and went downhill.
Yeah.
But if you went straight, you could go between them.
Yeah.
But both of them actually turned and went into the start finish. Just overshoot. Just
Well, I think what was really...
So you were still swallowing markers.
That was, like, really emotionally hard, especially because after I realized it and I went back, I started passing people I passed, like, an hour ago.
Yeah.
Because it literally cost me... In those conditions, yeah. It cost you over an hour to do, you know, it's like an hour and a half to do 5 extra bonus miles in those conditions.
Yeah.
So it was, like, you know, like, 3 or 4 of them were on that one
How
spot.
How soon after Leah did you come in?
I don't know. Was it like an hour? No, maybe like 2 hours. I don't know.
I don't know what our times were.
But not long enough after that. Those 5 miles didn't cost you first place.
Oh no, okay. No. Yeah, I'm not sure how far ahead she was, because I know at one point, Jess from the group was volunteering at an aid station, and she's like, "No, Lee's like only a little bit ahead of you," and I'm like, "No, I think she's like a couple loops ahead."
A lot
though,
of people.
And she's like,
know.
"Well." No, she's sleeping.
I fell asleep.
She's like, you'll probably catch her. So
I was completely unconscious.
But she seemed to think we were in the same loop, so I don't know if that was true or not, but I never did catch her. She thought I would catch her, so she must have woken back up on her way out of there. But I could picture, it's funny because when she said that, I could picture exactly how Lee came into that aid station.
I drank some Coke
I've seen sleeping Lee.
Yeah.
I had one loop I did that took me like an hour above what it took
when
me all
she
the time.
She does a short caffeine nap, and she's like, "All right, I'm a little."
Well,
I fell asleep on her, like I woke up on a rock, and I fell off the bridge,
but just keeps walking kind of in the right direction, but like this, I kind of expected if I ran up the road that I'd catch up to wobblingly, but apparently she woke up for the road section, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah,
it's probably good.
So, anything else to say about Wild Goose aside from? If you're starting to train for your first 100-miler, next year's Wild Goose probably
target. Obviously, these were extenuating circumstances,
right.
And the weather can't be controlled. I really do think this would be a really good first 100 for, you know, for when there's not tropical storms.
Even if
when
not
it's not tropical storming.
It was only an hour and a half apart.
Was it an hour and a half apart?
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah. I actually thought you were good at one point, because when I got the sleepies, I was just slid on in.
I shouldn't have brought it up.
I was probably right behind us. She said you left only 7 minutes ahead of me,
yeah.
And that you were on the same
route. Now you gotta pay attention to where you're going. You could have won.
Son of a...
All right. Well, at least you still got the buckle. What's the buckle look like? What's this buckle that got you out on this course and you got so excited about?
Oh, that's gonna be painful for a while. Oh.
But they're all individual.
The
rainbows
yes,
vary.
So sorry. Oh, I guess you already took yours off. So I'm like, well, we could do
ours,
a close up.
Yeah,
I could do a close up screen check.
Right.
Oh, I guess I
ours
should
are really
back.
Similar.
Oh yeah, that's the thing too. Kim Hand makes these.
What?
And there were like
yeah, so
different
the
ones.
Different...
Ours were pretty similar actually.
And she has more blue.
We actually picked, I think, the two most similar ones on the table, but
so
there's different,
there's
varieties. They're unique.
And this hand thing is different on some.
And you get to, you get to pick.
Are these wood?
Yep.
Like, okay, so
it's a brass frame with a stamped wood inlay. Yeah.
But it's like my new favorite.
And then
buckle.
There's glitter
and
whatever you call that stuff you pour on bar tops.
I'm guessing.
To seal it.
I'm guessing she made that.
The wood is protected. Yeah,
yeah.
With epoxy resin.
Resin. That's the term.
But there's actually
two
goose Sasquatches. One of them does the rock and roll sign, and the other is making a fist.
So it's a Sasquatch riding a goose?
Yeah. Riding a wild goose across a rainbow. The rainbows vary. Some of the rainbows all have different color themes, and some of them are shaped different.
And I would assume.
Were you guys like, give me the gayest rainbow you have?
Pretty much.
And then I would assume that she probably made the little first and second place prize too.
There's first and second place prizes?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like little wood ornaments that are super cool. Yeah, they're over there.
By the duck.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You could trade if you.
You could have traded if Carmel didn't get lost.
I mean, yeah, that's part of the sport though, is not getting lost.
Part
of the game. I think she has an Etsy shop.
Yeah, but I still feel that, my last 3 races, all of them could have been faster, especially this last one.
Well, I think that's what happens when
you run Wild Goose again?
That's a possibility. It just depends on where it fits in the schedule. Yeah. We have a, I mean, it's one of those things where it would have to just fit the schedule.
Wild goose seems like it could be like a big social race too. So if like a lot of other people are running it.
That's just, my thing is that like, I think if Kelly decides to run it or anything like that, like I would definitely consider going back out in some capacity, yeah. whether
you're crewing or running
to run it or to like hang out at the trail party. And especially if we did, you know, I am going to encourage this as a first 100. So if we get like another big group where we're talking like 20 women, like, you know, something along the lines of like rim to river numbers or maybe a little higher, especially because it's driving distance. Yeah. It's a little harder when it's something like, you know, Dinosaur Valley in Texas is another one we recommend, but it's very difficult for me to get to Texas.
Yeah.
I can't take the I can't burn PTO and
plane flights and all that.
Yeah, flights, PTO, all that to go crew when crewing's not my thing. It's just not where I get my jollies. I try to contribute to the community.
Gets super stressed out.
Much of an empath.
We did try it. We tested ourselves and we gave it our best shot.
Yes, we did. But, you know, I contribute to the ultra running community through the project group, not through volunteering and crewing because I just don't enjoy those things. They make me uncomfortable. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. I feel super awkward doing it.
I'm
an introvert. Yeah. I feel really weird being like, let me take your side. Like, it's not because I'm grossed out by feet. I just feel uncomfortable by all of it. And if somebody's like, no, I don't need that, I'm just like, okay, but secretly think like, yes, you do. But like, I don't fight them on it. Where Lee's just like, yes, you do. Open your mouth and like dumps it in. Like, I'm just like, I'm just not that personality.
Mild exaggeration.
So I don't want to do that. I don't want to necessarily, like, I'm not going to fly and burn PTO for that. I would consider doing it if I was available, like, you know, at Wild Goose, when you're talking about something that's a weekend trip for us. I could definitely see us going back in some capacity, either to run it or to, like, hang out at least, at the very least. Cool. Like, I could hang out and get you things, like, if you ask for them, but don't make me official crew, probably. I'm terrible at it. You don't want me for that.
But you'll be there to party.
It's a party.
Well, it's also, like, if you are crewing someone there, there's not, like, the stress of having to drive from place to place, because you're just hanging out in one place.
Right.
When you're having multiple people, that can be like intense, like running around for a bit too. Like I found out at Mohican, like, okay, we've got this runner coming in now, we've got that runner coming in then, like, that can be kind of intense.
Yeah.
To pace people up. Okay. You don't want to groom.
Yeah, something. Yeah. I mean, definitely. We'll see.
And for a finale wrap up to the podcast, we're going to take questions from the Facebook group and follow up on those.
What is your 4 month? This is a good one from Jennifer Carroll Halliday. What does your 4 month training break look like?
So this break is going to be, to make it clear, we're taking a break from racing to do training, to do hard training. Yes. And, I mean, that honestly doesn't look much different than the plan that's in the group. We use that plan. Like, we're not just, you know, here, follow this and doing a completely different thing. We do make modifications and some changes just because boredom and longevity, you know, like years of like the same. So there are some changes and for variety, you know, too.
Well, one of the things that happens to me, because I'm used to never training more than 4 or 5 weeks in a row, because I never go that long without racing to where there's a taper and a recovery, is remembering that if I have that big a break, I have to actually take every 4 or 5 weeks. I mean, every fourth or fifth week, actually cut the volume back and do a 3-day running week and not do a serious long run.
Yeah.
If you do constant build, you will get hurt. I love to ignore that. And then I know what happens. So it's counterproductive. Like, you just have to take, you don't need to take the whole taper and recovery that you do with a race. People be like, oh, I'll just throw in a 50K as training. Not training is a break from training.
Yeah.
It's okay to do, but it is not training. And you do actually, if you do not taper, you're not racing a 50K. You're being silly. It's too long a run on tired legs. If you are tapering down for it, then you're taking that week off and the next week training is wrecked. So you're still taking 2 weeks off instead of one light week. It's totally okay if it sparks joy, if that's what you want. But I'm going to try to avoid doing that. I may run a 5K at some point in a light week because I haven't run one. But I don't feel like a 5K will trash me out for a week afterward. But so there will be, my Saturdays will be more varied, and I'll try to do once a month, I'll try to do a long run on not beat up legs.
Yeah.
I'll try to do a 20-mile mild progression run where I negative split a 20-mile run, 20, 22 miles, and negative split it on purpose on legs that aren't wrecked because I don't spend a lot of time running at that higher pace.
Yeah.
My legs are trashed. And I will probably do more of, in the hard week, there's the 10-minute repeats. It says do 5 of them. I actually top that out at 7 of them. And I will do that sometimes as a hard Saturday and not do any hill repeats. My intervals will switch around more. So there will be some sessions of things like 12 or 14 by 2-minute repeats, which is horrific. 12 by 2-minute repeats sucks. But really pushed, but really walking the recoveries all the way. So it's a high volume of speed, but it's actually still with real breaks between. So I can really push because that works on that speed muscle. So I won't do that every week. So that'll get thrown in. But 6 by 10-minute repeats will be in there at least once a month, possibly twice a month. I won't do a lot of hill slogging. We've done it before. I don't like it. I think it beats me up too much for too little benefit. I'm going to do a lot more 6-minute legs and a lot more of the posterior chain strength, and I'm not going to do any more 3-hour hill slogs.
Are you going to do any tire?
Well, that's what I was going to say is I think we're going to have a little bit of a different training schedule. Part of that reason being that I do think I benefit from the hill slogs because my uphill is so weak. My downhill has always been my gift. I just kind of came that way. Yeah. Like, and
that you did.
If I could improve my uphill even to average, like, gosh, that's gonna be huge.
Are you sure that you don't need to do actually a hill that you can run up hard, like slightly shorter?
Well, I feel like she will
actually run up it as hard as you can.
I mean, running up a local hill. Yeah, like, I feel like yeah, I've done that, and I feel like that's benefited me.
I'm saying.
So I'm going to go back to doing that. So I think I'm going to keep up with
I'm doing
a lot of hills. But I would also like to do tire in place of speed work once a month. I actually don't enjoy speed work.
I'm looking forward to you guys doing tire because that's the only ways I can keep up with you on a training run is if we tie tires to you guys.
Well, there you go. She says she'll do it. So
And I might also be willing to do like a speed work Tuesday and a tire Wednesday.
This is the only way I can run with Lee where our levels of exertion are anywhere near each other is if Lee has a tire tied to her and I don't.
But we're in the midst of
right now you'd be
of kind of settling our race schedule and I mean just in general I want to be in really good 100 miler shape for all the hundreds, but one of the things we're looking at is 100K with 21,000 feet of elevation gain. Wow. Things like that.
It's somewhat technical. It has a 31-hour time limit.
We're not 100% yet. But just all the races we do in general. I mean, having a stronger uphill is gonna help me. But I think the person who asked that was also at one point asking about like if we do any kind of lifting, and yes, we
do. I think you might need squats for your uphill. I hate to say it.
Yeah, I'll do squats. I used to do them. I did them back when we first started.
Usually they're not
that
advisable, but if your knees are good with it and your back's good with it, it might not be a bad plan.
I used to do them.
You want to build that in now.
The 6-minute legs I'm going to be doing every other day. So, you know, kind of what my day looks like at this point is just doing the strength and PT stuff that I have. Doing a little bit of lifting. So I do lifting chest and back and shoulders and arms. That is kind of a good thing to throw in. I guess that's something we haven't really put in the group as much.
We've been leaving it on people's own.
Yeah, just kind of letting people do that on their own, but maybe eventually is.
I have friends who are power lifters, and I've been lifting with them. I do more just lifting where they do power lifting.
Power lifting has some pretty big risks and downsides, potentially. It's rarely trained properly so as not to result in injuries that will affect running. And it depends who you are, too. Like, Carmel is not naturally huge in the legs. So if she gets her legs a little denser, it's not going to be a big deal. Some people naturally have really thick, strong legs. And lifting, they can already squat so much that all they're going to do when they do more is slow themselves down. Yeah. I tend towards skinnier legs, so I can go with a certain amount of it, except my knees too trash to safely lift much that way.
Well, I definitely, my form definitely improves when my back is stronger. So it's possible that down the road, when we knock some other priorities out, that we might add a little bit of some free weight stuff to the plan, like as an optional thing. I don't think that would be bad.
I like to add involved.
Well, because we get a lot of inquiries on that, and I think in general we usually say, "Oh, don't do it." You know, you're not going to reap the whole benefits of the plan if you're doing other training. But we don't really mean lifting. You could do some light lifting on the side. So that would be a good thing.
Like
Beachbody stuff and all that. And you're not going to reap the benefits of speed work if you're doing, you know, these other, everything is placed on the plan as need be.
People aren't doing single legs with purpose. They're doing static planks, which are dangerous for runners and potentially very damaging, because if you have a strength imbalance, which almost everyone does when you do a static plank, your body will just contract the stronger side harder and you will worsen your strength imbalance and lock it in. It's going to cause all kinds of sacroiliac problems. And women are so prone to them already. Women runners as they age are so prone to them. But so many of these programs have that. Static planks, crunches, things that you just shouldn't be doing. Or else people are doing real powerlifting and they're doing like too heavy of squats. But it's still two legs together. And then completely skipping the single leg stuff because you've got to go light.
But we're off topic. Point being that it's going to be hard training. It's not like the racing is our off season. I think that was kind of confused when I said that we're taking a 4 month training break. The racing is our off season.
Yeah. I think Jennifer knew what you're talking about because she was looking for more weight training. Yes. Emphasis on strength and mobility. I think that
I'll be doing more upper body too, but a lot of that's because I have destroyed shoulders and I can do the strength training or have rotator cuff surgeries. Cool.
Jessica Elizabeth wants to know, how do you choose your calendar? Do you choose some races that have less vert, less technical in between mountainous and technical races? From Crazy Mountain to Jigger Johnson sounds like no.
By what sparks joy? Or what our friends suggest to us, they were unable to resist because the buckle looks cool.
Yeah.
And people are always like, no. No, why do you guys think that's so funny? No one actually runs 100 just because of the buckle.
It's true.
Yes, we do.
I forget which race it was, but there was one.
Rick sent me a picture of the buckle, and I registered because I was looking at a picture of
the buckle. Do you guys have one that's a belt buckle that I don't think you saw beforehand, but it actually looks like you two on a belt buckle? Like, it's got, like, silhouettes of two runners.
It was either Massanutten or Mohican.
I think it was Massanutten's buckle.
Those are kind of similar.
It has, like, a ponytailed runner and then a short-haired runner. Kind of hair off. And, like, even, like, the way the runners are standing is kind of like...
like their gait.
it was great.
No, I mean, I think in general for races, the races that appeal the most are... They have to have at least 20,000 feet of elevation gain.
16 to 18 isn't horrible.
Generally be somewhere we want to go... But then, like you said, if it's something friends are doing, like Mohican, or it's local, you know, easy to get to, like I'll probably do Tuscazora at some point and it doesn't fit that either, but there's going to be people we know there, it's close, it's easy, you don't burn PTO for it, so it's like, I could go do it.
Mountains, buckles, peer pressure.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how you choose your
mountains, buckles, peer pressure.
Yeah, look at like Crazy Mountain, that's the Crazy Mountains, we'd never been there, it's in Montana, it's an amazing mountain range.
Yeah, pretty.
White Mountains are beautiful, friends at Wild Goose, Massanutten was friends, Mohican was
also,
friends.
I guess we've simplified it too. I mean, we used to have the whole race board. We're changing how we do things.
Life list of races.
Like, we have a whole list of places, travel we want to do and stuff. So we do also try to do, one overseas trip a year.
Like, you guys don't do, like, a lot of other just non-race vacations.
We did Swiss
like, where do you want to go?
Yeah, so it's, like, all our races. So it's, like, we did Panama, we did, you know, Switzerland, and we'll probably be doing Romania 2024. And we like to combine the racing. Like, it's a really great way to get off the beaten path on the beaten path, I should say, and, you know, go out and see,
yourself.
That's one hell of a way to see a country.
Meet your own path.
You do get to see a lot of the nature. And then also, we have discovered what we need to do is get there, like, 2 days before race.
Pretty much
just enough buffer to get to the race, and then do the race, and then tourist. Because that's a good order. And also, I'm a better tourist. Like, I can do tours and things calmly if I'm tired out from racing. It's much more pleasant.
Mm.
Oh, it's like how my dog's better behaved after doggy daycare.
Right.
I'd say we're off topic again, but actually I do think that's a good thing to share at some point that is a lesson we've learned. That, like,
you can't be drinking wine touristing for 3 days before racing.
Yeah, you don't even realize how much the walk, like if you're walking all day, like we're fit people. You don't feel like you're doing much walking around the city all day.
You have a couple of
but when you're walking around cities all day for days in a row, it actually does impact your race.
It's more than I ever walk.
Yeah, so it's like vacation walking is usually around like 8 to 10 miles a day just for right. just walking around a city.
So it adds up. And yeah. like, I think we've not realized how much, like, yeah. I think we've made a couple of mistakes as far as that goes.
And we had and
having the race impacted. So yeah. Us, yeah, something to consider, you know.
So Jessica's also asking for those of us who may be interested in eventually racing more often, more than once or twice a year. Okay, Jessica.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for how to start doing that safely? So that's
yeah, put races through, just pick 200s that are 3 weeks apart and do them.
I mean, 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks is yeah, a good gap.
But then after the second one, don't schedule a third in a row. Like, give yourself a couple months of no races. Due to 2 weeks is a bit close. It can be done. We've done yeah. it. It's just fine.
But I wouldn't
it's
not start with 2 weeks. Approach. No, exactly. I wouldn't start with 2 weeks. But what I was going to say is our training plan that the Women's 100 Miler Project has, hips that's training. Pretty much the training plan I followed for a year, and I never went more than 3 months without racing after
yeah.
that.
So like, the without plan doing is, like 100 miles. Is the build.
Yeah, the plan is the build up. And I, yeah. you see, my training has always been very inconsistent
yeah.
since that first year yeah. of build up.
So this it's, is
how racing. Wait, but how do you feel about 3 weeks as a race gap?
3 weeks is a good gap. Yeah. I agree with what you were saying.
Once you get to 5 to 6, you start to have
problems. 4 to 6 is a terrible gap because you can't train. It's like, there's,
because you're done with recovery, you've got like a week to train.
Or you're still in a weird overlap of the two, because like yeah. Crazy Mountain, for example, like it's hard. Like there's some reasons you're just like,
I also, we were using a portmanteau Recover-Apery for a while.
Recover-Apery, yeah.
We're trying to transition that into Taper-Rovery.
No, Recover-Apery.
But I think the problem with 4 to 6 weeks is it's too long to not do much. Like, it's too, you will lose
Wild Goose was 5 weeks, and it gave me trouble because then I tried to throw in speed work, but I wasn't recovered enough to really do it. So I did short sessions. And I it's possible some of my trouble was I overdid.
So you're going
to
stack.
She went out of town to see kids.
Yeah, we were saying.
And I went ahead
like,
and trained while she was out of town between races, and I probably pushed it harder. Like, I almost would have been better off with a 3 week gap and nothing. Than 5 weeks and having to fit something in.
We kind of talked about this and we agreed that a two or three week gap is better than a 4 to 6 week gap because it is just such an awkward timing of like you are going to lose.
Yeah, but what if all your friends 8 to 12 is great. Like 5 weeks later,
then you do it.
I'm just saying like you're going to lose. You will lose fitness.
That's what Rick does.
Like, and I think that's what happened this year is I think we lost fitness. Like, I have definitely slowed down. I guess you've slowed down, too, according to you. We've lost fitness because of those, like, five-week gaps where it's like, I can't do real training, but it's too long to not do training, and you lose fitness over that time. You don't lose fitness in 2 weeks of, like, I do 100, I do another 100, I recover, I start training again. And so we have to try
to be scared and do it anyway.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, are we going to be any better next year? Probably not.
Plus, you look like a real hard ass when you're going into 100. You're like, yeah, the one I did 3 weeks ago was like this.
Well, apparently I would have been more recovered if I
How was your last long run, Will?
All right. So, last up, Thea wants to know your favorite race and why.
That's too hard. I've run too many.
Oh, too hard. The Bear.
The Bear is pretty good.
The Bear is my favorite. Beautiful. It's still one of the most beautiful courses I've run. I mean, there's some comparable, but I think the Bear has more. Not only is it beautiful, like I felt like Fat Dog was similar, but it had more consistent views. Whereas the Bear, you get like this whole variety of like mountains down and through a pine there's forest there's just like a lot. It's a point to point too. So there's no repeats. It's just like everything is kind of a surprise, And that's, I find that so much like mentally easier too, because you're like, I don't know what the next segment's going to be. I don't want to miss any segments versus like a loop course, especially a loop course in the conditions we just did where you're like, I've seen it all, you know?
Now I'll do this loop.
And then the aid stations were great. Like you could hear them like, you could hear them from like, a mile away.
It was only bad because you're like, oh, the aid station. And then you jog for another 10 minutes. And you're like, I can still hear the aid station, but where the hell is it? 20 minutes later. Oh, I think I see lights through the trees.
You know, it's one of those like just the sound of music and generators in the night. Like, but the aid stations were hopping and the aid station volunteers at the time I ran it, at least were 100 miler runners.
Yeah.
And you don't find that much anymore, which I like. You know, it's cute when the locals do it, and it's all the
everyone has your stuff. Community.
But also, there's a different thing when it's
somebody's
like,
"I know what you're feeling."
Yeah, like when they know what you need. They like, you know, it's just
you've
definitely
got this. Trust me, I know.
This is what motivates me to sometimes volunteer for night sections.
Well, I think sometimes people who don't know better, they over. Do you need anything?
Yeah.
Are you sure you don't? Like, I'm trying to do my routine and very independent. And are you sure you don't need anything?
Yeah.
How's it going out there?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, I need you to, like, yes,
I
mean,
somebody's done it before. It's like, want me to fill that or you got it? You got it? Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They know, like, when to, like, step off. Exactly. Yeah. Because some people are like that where it literally slows me down to have somebody in my face
like listening. They're waiting for you to ask a question. Like, where's the salt?
But also, it was my first 100-miler finish. So there's, like, a great.
No, it was
sentimental.
It was a pretty good course.
Yeah, and it was the first time I saw a bear. Was that the bear?
The bear.
I always wanted to see a bear.
I saw a bear.
She walked right up on the bear. She didn't think it was a bear, and she walked right up to it.
Yeah, the follow up was like, and you would do again. Of course, you do bear again. You said,
I mean, I've done. I probably won't do Orcas again, but I have done it.
You've done Orcas
four times. Chicamocha Canyon was darn interesting.
I wouldn't mind going with you to that if you wanted to do it again.
And we
both said that we would do the bear again. It's rare for us to do a race that you have to fly to twice. Like, when you drive to, fine. But, you know, like, and we'll drive if it's, like, less than 8 hours or 9 hours.
There's plenty of races.
Orcas Island was cool, but that would have to be a discussion just because it cancels too easy. It cancels for weather that's normal for the time of year that the race happens.
Yeah. Or else
and
the ferries get
to fly all the way out to Washington, take a ferry, get out there, like, but otherwise, I mean,
it was cool
pretty
to do, though.
It's a cool place.
I've loved
but
it four
I,
times.
I can't recommend it in good conscience knowing that.
Move okay. Around. Rapid fire. Best scenery or sunset sunrise?
Of a race course?
Yeah.
Swiss Peaks.
Yeah, when we were up by the glaciers,
at one point we just said "fuck it" and we just sat down and watched.
We lay down and watched the sun come up on the glaciers.
Favorite trail food? Is it Oreo sludge?
You know what? My new favorite thing. I freaking love it when they have vegan pierogies at the aid stations. Wild Goose had the vegan pierogies. Oh my god! I was like,
they salt olive oil,
and it wasn't like at Fat Dog they had them, but they were like, you could take like one. And I'm like, but at Wild Goose, I was like, do you care if I take another one? And they're like, take as many as you want. And I'm like,
all right, vegan pierogies.
Yeah, okay. I don't eat trail food.
We're not doing so well with the rapid fire.
Once in a while, bacon.
Okay, so vegan pierogies and bacon.
But I like pierogies too.
Found the incompatibility. Favorite non-trail food.
Okay. Fat cats. It's a restaurant.
Fat cats is my favorite restaurant.
Yeah,
so I'll
go with
that too.
Fat cats. All right. Memorable local experience or running. So we'll just go like memorable local place that you've done a race.
Memorable
Chicamocha Canyon.
Santander, San Hill. It's in Colombia.
Yeah, like locality around the race.
Okay. Little town.
It's
Colombia.
Local experience.
Cape Town.
Panama, actually, I think was, because the villagers, it was like rural Panama. Like there were actual like people like barefoot living
Spanish
in huts
is a second
and
language.
Stuff. So I don't know why I said
no
that.
English.
So sorry, had to change. I know we're rapid firing, but I had to change.
Worst trail food.
Worst? Well, I've thrown up watermelon, and I fell on the ground, and the little pieces crawled away from me, and so I have a bad association for that as a trail food, even though I love it in life.
Okay, heave.
That's not a food, but yeah, heave.
I'm counting it.
Okay, funniest mistake.
When I took the 5-HTP pills, I had packed
when
a little bag.
When you took a sedative instead of a salt pill?
I was, you know,
times.
When I was a pilot, I had to go out of town for work. So I took my 5-HTP pills, which are supposedly supposed to help you sleep better. I don't know if they worked or not. It was like a stressful time. So I filled up a baggie with the 5-HTP pills for my travels to work. And it was the same lunchbox I take and use as a drop bag sometimes. So one of us apparently thought that they were salt pills and put them in as my salt pills for Outlaw. And so at Outlaw, I who's just tanking, like, throughout the race, I'm just deteriorating. Worse and worse and worse, just, and I they're the signs of being low on salt, so I'm, like, popping more and more and more and more, and I don't even know what happens. So, sorry, this is not going to be rapid fire, but I end up being, like, they have, like, this shower house, right? And I'm so cold and so tired that I end up just in the shower, just shivering under the hot water, laying in the fetal position on this chair. And, like, I don't know how I'm going to get out. I have no towel or anything. I just know that
I, like, found her once.
Like, I'm warm. And then I hear, like, the voices of Deidre and Lee. And I'm like, Deidre, Lee, is that you?
Deidre happened on me.
They're like, Carmel, where are you? And I'm like, I'm in the shower. And, like, Lee opens the shower curtain. And I'm just there naked in the fetal position. And I'm like, my race went south. And she's like, I could see that. Well, I didn't even know what happened. Like, the next day she ended up giving me all this salt and Coke. And, like, I was able to finish 100 miles. I was supposed to do the 135. It wasn't until 2 weeks later at Run Love It that I had the same bag. And this time I decided to bite into the salt pills because Lee said, you know, oh, the salt pills don't absorb very well. Maybe bite into them. I bit into it and so I'm like, this isn't salt. And right when that happened, I realized, like, this is the baggie from Outlaw. Like, this whole fucking time, this is my bag of 5-HTP pills. This isn't salt. So for all of Outlaw, I took no salt and was just, like, overdosing on 5-HTP. I don't know what that does. Like, I don't know if it does anything or if it
makes
was just
you
lack
get fetal in showers with
but,
no plan for how you're going to dry
but
and warm again.
So would running 100 miles without any salt would also make
right.
you feel
no, this no. was worse. No, because you'd feel horrible, but you don't understand. So, it was like 40 degrees outside, and she went into a camp,
I mean,
unheated campground shower building, took off everything she was wearing, had no dry clothes,
I think
no
she understands because
no
I just told her. But it was
no,
like it was like 14.5-HTP pills. So I don't know if that's enough to, like,
yeah.
you know, like, because the if it helps you sleep is like an old wives' tale
yeah.
kind of thing. Like, maybe that'll work or not. But nonetheless, I had no salt for all that
okay.
time.
Interesting wildlife. We talked a little about bears and stuff, so I'm just going to answer this one. Hieronymus, the skunk.
We haven't seen him at a race.
No, but he's, it doesn't say at a race.
Howler monkeys. Howler monkeys.
Interesting wildlife.
Oh, we saw a sloth.
And
animal.
A sloth.
Okay. That's good.
Favorite swimming hole.
In a race or?
Yeah. Oh, the one fork of the American River at Western States when it was 113 fucking degrees for sure. And that was great. I went and lay in it.
Yeah, now that we laid in a lake at Cocodona, that was like, I don't have like a
good.
Favorite swimming hole. I don't know if it's okay. general or not.
But. Friendliest locals.
The bear?
Oh, yeah, I kind of
I'll
think,
tell you what,
honestly,
I would say Chicamocha.
I think
so.
Like Cloud Splitter in general, like I
yeah.
felt like that town was very welcoming of the race. But then
yeah.
the woman who gave us the coconut at Panama stand,
oh.
like just the woman, just the one woman
yeah,
who like
she's
she hacked open
she's
a coconut.
Friendliest
she
local in general might be Cloud Splitter. Friendliest local specifically is that woman in
that,
Panama.
This woman who hacked open a coconut
no,
and said,
there were
"This will revive
who knew about
you."
The race, and it was that same kind of thing where there were local people. They had not volunteered for the race. They were just like hanging out, waiting for runners to come through because the aid station was in like the town plaza, like the side plaza park thing. So they were like just cheering for everyone and. Just, but they had nothing to do with the race except they'd heard about it, so they came out to cheer for us.
And of course, anything to do with skunks.
Should I go get Hieronymus? Do we need to see him?
I'll get Hieronymus.
He probably wants a snack.
Yeah, it is. Just a bad
if we wake thing. Him up, we'll probably have to get him a cricket.
We'll get him a cricket. And then Amanda says, sounds like a fun night. It is a fun night.
Oh, we could get back in a minute. Okay, this is Hieronymus. We just woke him up.
He's sleepy.
Hi, baby.
Oh, are you grabbing a blanket?
Hey, Hieronymus.
Hey, Ronnie.
What do you think about this radish here, Mr. Healthy Eater? Would you like to have that?
See, I think Hieronymus will make us have a more sensible racing schedule because when I think about, like, dumb races that we shouldn't be doing that we could usually be talked into... And I'm like, oh, but I don't want to be maybe. Away from Hieronymus. Like, it has to be good for me to be away from Hieronymus, right?
Yeah.
Hey.
Up
and now he's...
They love when he holds his
you gotta,
foods.
They can't see him, though.
They're live reporting. Okay, well, he's holding the radish with his tiny paw, and he's scrunching up
cute.
His little nose.
You could get the phone off if you want.
be watching Hieronymus either.
We're going to separate this into separate episodes. I think episode 5 is Hieronymus eats a radish.
Who doesn't want to watch a skunk eating a radish on an ultra running podcast?
Right. So, if you need little introduction.
This is Hieronymus's favorite aid station food.
Hieronymus's favorite aid station food.
He's just not awake. He's like a sleepy ultra runner. He's 3 in the morning.
I think grasshoppers is his favorite aid station food.
He's a pretty big fan of grasshoppers. I'm telling you, you had to see what he did to that rotisserie chicken when I gave it to him.
That's my favorite rotisserie chicken.
I
love
that rotisserie chicken too.
He's pretty happy about it. Oh, and then there were some duck eggs. I fried duck eggs in olive oil. Yeah, he was pretty happy about that. Anything novel, he's pretty happy about.
You are a wonderful skunk.